Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back. Or if you're new around here, hi, my name's Georgia, and on my platforms are on the internet, I talk about true crime. Today I have a Doe case for you, that of a John Doe who is known simply by the name of One-Eyed Jack, for reasons that I'm sure are pretty obvious. It's estimated that Jack died around 1978, being found in the wilderness of Alaska, and despite the intensive search for his identity, his name has never been uncovered. In a very strange twist though, we do know his killer. He died in custody in 2003, and despite the killer sharing a lot of information about Jack to investigators, his identity still remains elusive. Who was this mysterious man with this very distinctive appearance? Let's see if we can find out. So let's dive into the story of One-Eyed Jack and see if we can maybe reach somebody who might have some answers, somebody who might have known him and might still be missing him to this very day. Time and time again, we see does get identified, their families coming out and saying they've been searching for decades to no avail, that thanks to state borders, different police departments, decomposed, unrecognisable remains, and older generations being unsure how to utilise technology, they just hadn't made the connections. This case we're talking about today was the 70s, the hippie movement. Free spirits, plenty of people did just up and move away in this time, cutting off contact with their families in a time where connection wasn't as easy and quick as it is nowadays in the world of smartphones and social media. Lots of people in this time may just think the family members moved away, not thinking that something bad happened to them. And that's why I believe that sharing the stories of Doe cases is so important. So our tale today takes place in a tiny place called Tok in North Star County, Eastern Alaska, very, very close to the Canadian border. And when I say tiny, I mean tiny. The 1980 census states a population of just 589 people, and that had doubled in the last decade. In 1970, there was just 214 people living in Tok. So it's quite unbelievable that a resident even came across the skeletal remains of Jack Doe on August 20th, 1979, just abandoned alongside a deserted road. Police were called to the scene where they found that these remains had just been ravaged by animals in the time they had been there, meaning that to this day the skeleton is still incomplete. But there were some clues to be found at the scene. They found long strands of brown hair, which was one of the earliest clues as to this man's identity. He had long brunette hair. Sources say that the police actually did find a decent amount of evidence at the scene, but not all of this has been released to the public. And they usually do this in an attempt to have something to catch the killer with in questioning or in the investigation. But as I mentioned earlier, the killer was quickly apprehended in this case, so I'm very unsure as to why this information has never been released to the public. I mean, maybe it just didn't need to be, maybe I'm just being nosy, but this information never being released does mean we don't know exactly how or why the suspect was apprehended. And this could provide some further clues as to Jack's identity, but it's never been released, we don't know. But what we do know is that, or around the time the body was found, a 34-year-old man called Jesse Burt Bishop was in custody in Nevada on a completely different charge, and somehow they were able to connect him with Jack Doe. After being confronted whilst in custody, Bishop apparently willingly gave Alaskan investigators details of the murder, saying that he simply killed him because he was getting on my nerves, which is definitely one of the colder justifications for murder that I've ever heard. The story Bishop told was as follows. One day in September 1978, he spotted Jack Doe hitchhiking on the outskirts of Boise, Idaho, and he decided to pick him up. Now, if Bishop was the kind of person who got so annoyed by people that he eventually turns to murder, I have no idea why he'd want to pick up a hitchhiker, but this was his story. Maybe his intention was to kill all along. But they ended up spending about 2 full days together. Jack originally wanted to head to Pendleton in Oregon, but when he learned that Bishop was going all the way up to Alaska, he decided to just come along for the adventure. This was clearly a very transient guy who didn't really have a plan set in stone. He was just going where life took him day by day. But that's a very long drive from Idaho all the way to Alaska. It's a lot of time to be spending stuck in a metal box with a stranger. So Jack must have been a very trusting, easygoing, laid-back kind of person. Bishop has said that Jack revealed a lot of information about himself during that time. But of course, this is something that needs to be taken with a pinch of salt because Bishop was not a good guy. Sure, maybe he was telling the truth about their time together, but it's also just as likely that he was playing with the authorities and just outright lying, just for a bit of fun. We don't know. He could also just be remembering things wrong. It didn't make any difference to Bishop as to whether Jack Doe was identified or not. He was still going to get done for murder, so why did he have to help investigators out here? But what Bishop shared was this. Jack apparently did show him his driver's license at one point. It was an Oregon license that stated he was 32 years old, meaning he was born in 1946. This also means that Jack was more than likely his real name and not just a Doe placeholder. Bishop said it was either Jack or John. So Jack or John, 32 years old, from Oregon. That's a lot more information than we have on a lot of Does. Again, that's if we believe Bishop. But my question is, how do you spend 2 straight days with somebody and not remember their name? Like, how can you kill somebody and not have the regard to learn their name? I just despair at humanity sometimes, but I've been doing this for a long time. People are just genuinely awful. He remembered Jack as being a white male, around 6 foot tall and 180 pounds. Later examination of the remains by an anthropologist would confirm these details, adding that he was likely 25 to 35 years old. Now obviously we've already been told by Bishop that he was 32, but we don't know if we can believe him, but the anthropologist has kind of confirmed he's in this age range for sure. Jack also has long dark hair with a curl to it, and he wore a headband. And also, very importantly, he wore a distinctive eye patch over his left eye, which was completely missing. Jack apparently told Bishop a story about how he lost his eye in a logging accident in Oregon, something to do with the choker cable, which I'm pretty sure is like the cable wrapped around a log so it can be moved to a different area. I don't know exactly how somebody could lose their eye with that, but crazier things have happened. I don't not believe it. Bishop also said that he thought the victim had worked for a Lincoln car dealership in Colorado or Utah where he washed cars. And the man also said he'd been married. But Bishop did tell investigators that he got the impression that this was a man who lied a lot, who sort of like made up stories. So again, that's another reason maybe not to believe everything Bishop said or everything Jack maybe said. Despite all of this information, investigators were never able to get closer to an identity for Jack Doe. But Jesse Bishop was convicted, he pled guilty and died in prison in 2003, and he never provided any further information as his victim. One-Eyed Jack was found wearing a green and brown plaid Mervyn's Mark II jacket in size large, blue jeans and a green and white plaid CPO style shirt. A CPO shirt refers to the heavy wool shirts with single flap pockets that were issued to US Navy Chief Petty Officers. It was just this like very sort of like heavy duty shirt. Underneath, he was also wearing a plain white t-shirt. Alongside the remains, they also found a pair of blue socks and brown leather ankle lace boots and his black leather eye patch tangled in his remaining hair along with a blue bandana. In one of his pockets, they found a white and orange marble, which he maybe used as a false eye when not wearing his eye patch. He didn't have access to a fake eye, it seems. They also found 2 packs of Winston cigarettes and 3 books of matches. He was a smoker, and Bishop confirmed just as much. It's also thought that Bishop probably robbed Jack before dumping his body, as he was only found with 15 cents in his pocket in Canadian currency. Which makes sense as they would have had to have driven through Canada to reach Alaska. It's thought that Jack may have had connections to Idaho, Oregon, particularly the town of Pendleton, Utah, Colorado, and maybe even Canada. As I mentioned earlier, not all of Jack's remains were found. They were thought to have been ravaged by animals in the about 11 months they'd been in this location on the deserted road. But one of the most important missing bones was the mandible, the bottom part of his jaw. and this has caused a lot of complications over the years with recreations of his face. Anything forensic artists create featuring Jack's jaw is a guess at most, although one was created at the time. But when you're missing the entire bottom half of the face, you're missing a lot of information about what somebody looked like. Like, did they have like a pointed jaw? Did they have a wide jaw? Did they have like certain things on their teeth? We just don't know. In 2014, Carl Kopperman was asked by the Alaska State Police to create a facial reconstruction without the mandible. And so he did just that with a very bizarre looking reconstruction, making it look like Jack is kind of like staring at us over a dark wall, both with and without his eye patch. Carl Kopperman posted it to Web Sleuths, and it seems like after some requests, he did decide to create a full face reconstruction, saying he decided to complete the recon. He writes, "Of course, with no mandible, his chin and jawline are purely a guess, but I decided it was preferable to complete the image rather than show him like he's peeking over a wall. But just bear in mind that this full reconstruction could be completely off. We just don't know." So this is a guy who was clearly a transient, a guy who at the time of his death didn't have anywhere he needed to be. He was free to travel and float around as he wished. He clearly just picked up jobs wherever he was when he needed money. And we don't know how long he was living this transient lifestyle for. It could have been many years, to the point that people maybe stopped looking for him by the time he died. Whilst the fact that he wore an eye patch or was missing an eye is probably the most identifiable thing about Jack, we don't know exactly when that accident happened. We don't know when he lost his eye. We don't know whether it was before or after he last saw his family or his loved ones, so they might not even know that he was missing an eye. And without the identifiable feature of this eye, he was just a pretty standard guy, at least with what we know from the remains that we have and from Bishop's account. So there isn't anything like really distinguishable about him that we can sort of point out. There have been a couple of names people have looked at closely for Jack's identity over the decades, but nothing has ever been confirmed. John Hayward Barreto is the first one. He was 35 years old and was last seen in Miami in Florida. His parents said they last had contact with him on January 20th, 1977, when he called home to ask them to wire him some money. His disability payments were paid into his mum's account instead of into his own account, so whenever he needed money, she had to transfer it over. And he wasn't in the best place in life at this point. He struggled with what was likely to be PTSD after serving in the Vietnam War, and he was known to be on drugs at this time, living a very transient life. And John kind of fitted the physical description of Jack, like even his name potentially matched. And after that call to his parents, he just disappeared. I don't think it was unnecessarily unusual for John to go off the grid for a decent amount of time, so it is reasonable to think there could have been a period of like 18 months between his last contact and when he actually died in September 1978, which is when One-Eyed Jack died. John was legally declared dead in 1984, and although his name has been brought up many times in connection with One-Eyed Jack, authorities don't actually think it was him. He is listed online as an exclusion. Then there's also Billy Joe Marshall, who was 37 years old and disappeared from Ashley, Indiana on April 12th, 1974, which is 3 years before Jack's death. He again very much matched the physical description of Jack, and he was missing an eye, although apparently it was his right eye missing and not his left like Jack, which you would think would eliminate him as a possibility rather quickly, but his name came up in so many forums and articles I looked at, so I figured it's worth mentioning it here and saying it was not him. And then there's Franklin David Harder, who was 25 years old when he disappeared in April 1978. He was a bit of an odd person according to people who knew him in life. He was always a bit eccentric. He never really quite fitted in wherever he went. He was also a bit of a loner, and it's not out of the question that somebody like Bishop might have found him annoying. Once again, the physical descriptions here very much match up, although he didn't have a missing eye when he was last seen, and the timeline also does match up. He was last seen in Idaho County in Idaho, and he could have lost an eye in those 5 months before he was picked up by Bishop. However, Franklin is also listed as an exclusion online, so once again, probably not him. In terms of what is currently being done in Jack's case, I'm really not too sure. Doe Network does state that his dentals are available, although of course that will only be his top teeth as his bottom are missing alongside his mandible. The site does state that he had multiple crowns and a root canal in the remaining teeth alone, so he definitely sought out dental help at some point in the past. His fingerprints are not available as it was just skeletal remains that were found, but his DNA is available, which means there is definitely a chance he could be identified if the right agencies join this search. Now, I did have a look on the DNA Doe Project website and I couldn't find Jack's name on there, so I don't think he's currently under their care, although I think I might try and contact them with a suggestion. I don't think public can contact them with suggestions, but maybe I'll drop them an email. I'm not too sure. I'll find out. A lot of the time, it has to come down to the investigating agency to push the name forward, and it does seem like this is one that's just been kind of forgotten by the Alaskan authorities. There's not been any updates here in a long, long time. So many times in cases like this, we'll see just one person, like maybe a cold case detective or a medical examiner, pull an old case file out of a dusty cabinet and they become committed to getting it solved. Like, they lead the fight in getting it to the end. And it seems like that's what's needed in this case, just somebody to fight for Jack, to push his name to things like the DNA Doe Project or Othram to look at forensic genetic genealogy. And without that person, this case is kind of just falling to the wayside. A lot of the time for these investigating agencies, whether that's a small sheriff's office or a bigger police department, they just don't have the budget and the funding to spend time looking at these old cases from the 1970s. Like, what's more worth their time getting sorted? Like, cases that are happening right now or old cold cases everyone's forgotten about? Like, you're gonna do the cases now. So, which is why these like cold case teams are so important. Why having specific funding for cold cases is important. I wish I could end this one on a more positive note. I wish I could be like, yeah, they're actively fighting to try and get this one solved right now. Who knows, maybe things are happening behind the scenes that just aren't being advertised. Fingers crossed that is the case. But for now, let's just spread the word of Jack. Let's just talk to people about him. If you live in Idaho or in any of the areas I mentioned today, maybe just share this story around. Like, get his name, his face out there. He was potentially called Jack or John. He was probably 32 years old and he had an Oregon driver's license. Of course, the license, it could have been fake, we don't know. But that is like the most substantial information we have in this case. Thank you so much for tuning in today and I will see you in the next one. Bye guys.